It's time for our life update episode again. It's almost the end of summer, and Dr. Morgan shares about an unexpected diagnosis and her new extensive health journey, her decision on having another baby, and her philosophy around choice. I, Dr. Leah, talk extensively about my son's sleep journey, and I break down why we decided to gently sleep train and why co-sleeping wasn't working for us, as well as my choice around working less and momming more. This is a great episode with a lot of juicy, controversial opinions we can't wait to share. So let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Growing a baby, healing postpartum, making milk, your body's mineral needs are off the chart during these times. And that's why Dr. Leah and I swear by Relight by Redmond, the real salt people, an electrolyte powder packed with USA mined unrefined sea salt and essential minerals like magnesium, calcium, and potassium. Unlike many popular electrolyte companies, Redmond is the only company who is completely transparent about their sodium source because they own and operate the mine. It's clean, delicious, and the perfect thing for labor, breastfeeding, and thriving in mom life. So go ahead and grab a sample pack to try all of the flavors or hand your trust over to me and start with strawberry lemonade. Go to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off. Hydration handled.
Okay, we are here to share our life updates for season 9, right? Are we on season 9?
Yeah, it's crazy. We probably should just drop the seasonal names and just go with it. I don't know. I mean, whatever. Is there a point to having
seasons? Fun. I mean, it kind of feels like, oh, this is like a series that we do together, even though I get what you mean. But yes, we are in season 9. It feels like we've been doing it a long time. That's a lot of seasons. And we have some fun updates. We do this at the beginning of every season, which I think is nice. That kind of splits it up to help us check in and help people kind of understand where we are, because we are navigating motherhood and our own health and business and all the things right along with you. And I feel like my life update is very different than it was last life update. If anyone has been following us or wants to go back and listen to the life update at the beginning of season 8, I was definitely in a different place. And it's better now. But first, I want to hear about you and your life update. I'm actually genuinely excited because even though we're friends and we hang out, I'm like, what is going on with you?
Mine is all about my sort of health journey, really, is like the main thing. So yes, in the beginning, so what one thing is that is nice about these seasonal things is that we're sort of at like the end of summer now. Mm-hmm. And so at least they're sort of tracking along with actual calendar seasons in a way. So my update is that in the spring, we were all together at a girls' weekend, and I was talking about the idea of having a fifth baby, which is still very much like a moving target dynamic, up and down, 50-50 conversation. But actually then now I have an update on that too, which is like where I've settled on that decision, which I'll get to in a second. But when we were there with one of our other naturopathic doctor friends, Dr. Ilana Rumel. And I was talking about preconception work and how I was going to wean, because I hadn't weaned yet. I had not weaned Sunday, our fourth baby, but I was going to wean her soon. And then I was going to start doing more preconception things. And so was Wes, my husband. And she kind of looked at me, and I had COVID at the time, but I didn't know it. But she was like, you know, like, when was the last time basically that you have done – wait, have we already talked about this?
I don't think so. You told me deja vu. No, I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast.
Okay, sorry guys. If this is repeated,
no, it's not. We're just our friends. Okay, no, it's good. Not repeated. No way. I don't think so.
Okay. Mm-mm. Anyways, she was basically like, you should do a bunch of the deeper functional testing because you never know what you might have. And I was like, well, I really don't have any symptoms. But not in the way of like, I have kind of strange things that I've sort of had with my body for many, many years, but I didn't have like, you know, oh yeah, I eat this and I get stomach pain, or I like, I'm always really fatigued. Like, it just, I don't know. I think there is a good healthy also level of dissociation between my mind and body, which has been with me my entire life. I can just, I kind of feel like I live in my head, and it's hard for me to sort of tap down into my body and be in there. And so maybe there's some things that are going on that I wasn't feeling, which is totally potential. So anyway, she spurred me to go see the doctor that I used to work for when I would see pediatric patients here in Idaho. And that doctor's name is Dr. Jade Dandy at the Healing Hut. If anybody who's local wants to go to see her, she's an absolute magician. And through her assessment and a lot of blood tests later and poop tests and saliva tests and all sorts of things, we discovered that I have Lyme disease, which was a real big shocker because I have only ever had one known tick bite, and it was here in Idaho when I was 12 years old. But I did live in California for 6 years, and so the ticks that carry Lyme disease live there too. But also there's a lot of broader thought now that there may be other insects that can carry Borrelia burgdorferi and all of its different co-infections, or that it can also be passed between the maternal lineage. So when you were, you know, inside of your mom and she was pregnant with you, that you could have had it passed that way. There's also ideas that maybe it's transmitted sexually because it has been found in sexual fluids. The bacteria has been found in sexual fluids. They have not proven transmission to make a person sick from that. But there's just a lot of like potentials basically, and not a lot of research looking into it. So Dr. Dandy is a Lyme specialist. That's why she got into naturopathic medicine originally. And so it was really fascinating having that conversation with her. I also had reactivated EBV, which is Epstein-Barr virus, which is the virus that causes mono. That did not surprise me because viruses have always been my like kryptonite. It's kind of been in my life, like my digestion's been fine, my sleep has been fine, my hormones have been fine, but I would get sick. Like anyone, you know, I'm the person on the plane that someone has the sickness and then I'm the one that gets it. Like mm-hmm. my immune system would just be low and susceptible to things. And I was an exchange student right after high school. Like the year between high school and college, I went to Sweden and I lived in Sweden for the year. And on the end of that trip, I got mono super bad. And like you can see my lymph nodes in pictures. I was like completely pale white. And I didn't know that it was mono. I knew I was sick, but it was like such a strange sickness. I was just very tired. And I was like 18. I didn't know. And I got back to the States. My mom's a nurse and she's like, oh my God, you have EBV. You have mono like very badly. I went, got tested. It was positive. And I do remember her saying like, you really need to rest this summer before college starts, because if you don't, it can become chronic. Okay. Have fun tying an 18-year-old who hasn't seen her friends for an entire year, who've been in college for the year and needs to catch up on a lot of life things. And now I'm heading into college. Like, yeah, right. I didn't rest. I didn't do anything. So I think even if I had, it had already been suppressed, or it had already wrecked such havoc in my body that it was going to be something I dealt with on and off. But I didn't actually have that awareness until just this past spring, a couple months ago, that it was indeed happening, like where my antibody levels are showing, you know, present infection. Like it comes and it goes. It's one of those that kind of harbors in your body. Yeah. Okay. So then I also had a little bit of mold, and then I also had a really inflamed looking gut picture, which was shocking because you'd think you'd feel those symptoms, but I didn't. But then I have to be gluten-free and I have high Hashimoto antibodies. So that's antibodies against my thyroid, TPO antibodies. And so basically her assessment was, you've probably had Lyme potentially your whole life or from when you were a younger child, and it's laid dormant and for some reason really hasn't affected you. But like my levels were high enough that she was very surprised I wasn't like bedridden. Those are the words that she used, which is scary. And she was like, I think probably the way that you live your lifestyle has just kept you teetering under the edge of total collapse, basically. And that if something big and crazy happened, you probably would be like totally tanked out and over the edge. And I wonder too, if like, you know how bad I feel postpartum, mm-hmm. postpartum being such, and birth and stuff being such a big deal to your body. I wonder if every time I give birth that there's a little bit of it where I am at that brink where because we talked about this the other day, but literally you guys, after I give birth to a baby, I love birth. Like I've talked about that ad nauseum, but those days after and weeks, even getting up to like walk to the bathroom and come back, I'm totally tanked. Like I can't even almost stand up straight. Like I feel like I have no ATP, like my mitochondria, like you had a C-section, you were like walking around in your kitchen wearing your baby.
We had this conversation after my second child, because my issue is being pregnant, which I'm also trying to unravel that. Like, why is like the pregnancy so hard? But yeah, I remember you coming over and I was just like up and about, even though I had my C-section, and you're like, wait, aren't you like, how did you walk to the kitchen and not die? And I was like, I don't know, Morgan. I think that's a problem.
I know.
Because I feel great postpartum, like literally great. I'm like, wow, I'm not nauseous anymore. I'm not vomiting. I feel like I'm on top of the world despite sleeping over only like 2 or 3 hours a night. I'm like, I feel the best I've ever felt in my whole life. Not really, but you know, I feel really good. And I'm sure it's not super common, but I feel like the level of fatigue that you have is also not normal. It's like there's something in between what we both have is probably what's normal.
And as we were saying before we started to hit record today too, it's like everything in our lives, we are such a yin and yang. Like we could not be more opposites. Anything that happens to you doesn't happen to me. Anything that does happen to me doesn't happen to you. It's so funny. It's like we are just, I don't know. But then together we make the whole complete spectrum. So.
Yep, exactly. I know. Like I probably don't have Lyme even though who knows, maybe I do. But then, you know, I'll eat like a Skittle and I can feel the high fructose corn syrup in my gut, you know? I have like crazy gut inflammation, or like you have problems and don't even feel it. It's just like, what is the deal?
I know. It really is surprising. I don't know. So I'm so grateful that I did that testing because I wouldn't have known. And so now I do need to go get all of my 4 children tested for Lyme disease to ensure that I have not passed it down to them. So the cool thing about this doctor is that she has this bioresonance machine called the Moronova, which is something they use in Germany. So she can do a scan, sort of like a screening. And then if there is anything that's coming up positive on that, then she does the confirmatory blood testing. And so that appointment for my kids is in October. I'll keep you posted. Hope to God that nobody has it. But I do suspect one of them potentially who's kind of always sicker than the others, maybe she's the one that has it. I don't know. We'll see. So now I'm on this like big, long healing journey from all that. The mold was minimal and she thinks it was mostly from food or a potential biofilm that has been with me for a long time, but it was at a very low level. And when I had a follow-up with her, it was already gone based on her machine, not like in a, you know, mycotoxins urine test yet. But she was like, wow, that was fast and quick and easy. So that's good. But then everything else is showing that it's improving, but it's going to be like about a 6-month journey. I'm taking like, just before we started recording, I was taking all my supplements. I'm like on 40 to 50 things between pills and tinctures and powders. And it's just a lot. It's hard. It makes me – oh, the other thing was that I was extremely anemic in terms of low ferritin. So not – my hemoglobin hematocrit, fine. She's like, you know, those are honestly pretty unuseful markers unless you're, you know, working on something specific. But my ferritin's so low and I eat red meat like 3 times a week. I don't have a very heavy period. So like – this has been an issue for me for a long time. And now I feel like I have an explanation, which is nice, which is the Lyme disease. So
yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, for anyone listening, because I've run into this with patients, for anyone listening who has checked their ferritin, which if you didn't know to check is important. And I'll mention this in another episode, but I do have a free lab guide that you can get. I'll put the link in the show notes, but it's at womanhoodwellness.com/free. You can see all the labs that I recommend and the optimal ranges. But ferritin is that storage form of iron, and we wanted around 50 to 80. Yours was what, 7 or something?
Seven.
Okay. And so for someone, I've had this with patients before. If you are checking your ferritin, you're taking iron, you're eating red meat, you're doing all the things, and it is still low, that is a really big red flag for Lyme.
Or parasites of some kind.
Or parasites. The infection, the chronic low-grade infection eats up the iron. And that's what's going on. They want.
I mean, that is the lowest that's ever been in my life. Like even when I was pregnant with Sunday, I was battling low ferritin and I was starting to take additional iron and things, but it never got that bad. So I thought certainly now that it had been when I got this lab testing, she was 18 months. I was like, oh, cool. I can't wait for my ferritin to be like at least 30 or something. Nope. Worse than ever. So anyway, yeah. So I'm taking a million billion supplements. The ones that I take in the morning make me really nauseous sometimes. It's interesting. The first couple of weeks, I was fine with everything. I was like, wow, this is really annoying to have to swallow this amount. But like, I'm doing okay. I'm not having any like Herx reaction. I'm not super nauseous from all of the supplements, but now I am getting that way. We've also added and taken some things away. Like, you know, as time goes on, it changes. It's not the stagnant same protocol all the time. And no, I will not be sharing exactly what I'm taking because you need to work with your doctor on your individual body because it's very much perfectly tailored to me and my individual body. So, it wouldn't make sense to just say, you know, oh, I'm taking this and that and the other thing. And you should go do that too, because I'm working with like multiple layers of stuff. And she felt really like confident that we could kind of tackle it all at the same time. Sometimes she'll do phases. So we're sort of just doing it all like pretty hardcore. We want to go guns to the metal because if we are going to have a fifth baby, it kind of needs to be sooner than later. So that's my other life update, is that this, like, deciding whether or not to have a fifth baby thing has eaten me up inside. And I know that I am a total broken record about this, and people are probably rolling their eyes into me going, get over it. And I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. I won't. I can't get over it. And you know me, I won't stop talking about anything that I think and feel. So the fact of the matter is that I'm a planner and I like to know what's happening. And there's a piece of me that would love to clean out the closet that I have upstairs that's full of baby clothes that don't fit Sunday anymore. If we're not going to have any more kids, I would love to pass them along to other people. I would love to move on in that phase of my life and be like, okay, like as we're getting older, we can like sweep out all of the things that aren't applicable anymore, like get rid of this, that, and, you know, just, I don't know. For some reason, I very much crave that. I know it's not important.
And no, it's closing a chapter. I feel like energetically that's really important because it feels open.
Yes. And I don't like that. I don't want it to feel open. Yeah. I want it to be like, what are we doing? Because it hasn't been like, I know a lot of people can just lean into the idea of, well, we'll see, or, you know, whatever happens, or, and they're just very chill about it. I wish I could be chill about it. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while or following us for a while, you know that when I was pregnant with Sunday, because she was a bit of a surprise, and then after she was born, I was like so very settled and done and really loved the way that I felt. I felt so chapter closed, done, tied up, loose ends, like double knotted, you know. And for me to go back on that felt like a betrayal of my own mind and heart. Like, what? What are you doing, self? Like, what? But it was right around when she turned one. And then I started to be like, maybe we do want to have one more, because I'm 35. I'll be 36 in October, but my husband will be 44 soon. Mm-hmm. And he is like, you know, I know people have babies later than that, and that's totally fine, but everybody has their own individual cap. And for him, it's like now. Mm-hmm. So he's feeling very like, I don't want to have another new baby beyond like very soon. Wow. So in his mind, when we talk about it, and I'm like, where are you at with this fifth? He's the kind of person that's like, Moses, if you like got pregnant and you told me you were pregnant, I'd be so overjoyed. I'd be so happy. He's like, but do I want to like go try to get pregnant? Not necessarily. Right. And I'm like, okay, what's holding you back? And most of it is finances and his age.
Yeah.
Finances are hard always. But then he's feeling the time clock. And so he wants to do it sooner than later. Obviously, I can't do it until I'm healthy. And so we're now for this next 6 months, basically what I've decided, because we were then a different girls trip together, also with Ilana Rumel. And she helped me. Yeah, she's a big help in my life right now recently. And she was talking about this idea of choice and how we have the power in our lives to choose so much more than we think. And we can just make a statement for ourselves and cognizantly go forward with choosing one reality or another. And the way that that first came up for me when she was talking about it was that I am actively, and it's actually really working, I'm actively choosing to not be bothered by all the crap all over the floor in my house from my kids.
Really, you did. So great. I love that for you.
Yeah, and you see, you're really good at that.
Another thing, you've always been baffled by me. I love an orderly home. I do. And I am obsessed with organization. Like when I'm stressed out, my self-soothing mechanism is not wine. It's literally to organize like a cupboard. But I'm just not that bothered. I don't prefer it. It's not my preference to have clutter, but I'm not that bothered by it. I don't know.
No, and that blows my mind, knowing everything I know about you. I would think that you'd be like me, where I'm kind of like, you know, you're more of a type A mom. I'm more of a type B mom.
I guess, but I'm not very anxious.
No, but you're like together though.
You think that about me. You knowing me so well, I'm like, have you seen my car? I'm like totally the black SUV mom.
Yeah. Have you seen my car? I'm sure you have like what, one toy on the ground in your car. My car would disgust you. You would vomit.
That is maybe true. Not because it's your car, but like that's more what grosses me out, is like food stuff. But like clutter, yeah, I don't know. A lot of times I'm actually grateful. I'm like, wow, I'm so glad I didn't, you know, put that sock in the house because we need a sock and it's in the car. Like how great.
Yeah. I just, for some reason, it's like it's the way my brain gets really overwhelmed Like, yeah. Okay. So with sounds, you get very overstimulated with sounds.
Yes.
I do not. I get stimulated or overstimulated with the visual clutter. And so having four children and a dog who picks things up and drag and drops them all day long, if he didn't do that, it would probably be 25% less than it is right now. Like, seriously, love Doug, but that is the, if I could change anything about him, that's what I would change, which is that he did not always have to have something in his mouth and then he just drops it wherever. Yeah.
No, and the clutter is hard. I mean, because they say your external environment is a reflection of your internal environment.
Yes.
And so it is true. But if I had to put them next to each other, would you rather be in a car with screaming children or like in a cluttered car or cluttered home? I would choose the clutter over the noise. The noise for me is like nails on a chalkboard. Like it literally feels like I'm going to implode from the inside. Like I can't think of anything worse than that.
And it's immediate too. Like the sound, there's no like waiting. Oh,
like someone shot me, you know, and I'm just like, oh, and I just can't, you know? So yeah, I get if that's how it feels with you with clutter, I totally get that. But I love this choice idea because, you know, we do have choice.
Yeah. And it was exhausting me to constantly be picking up after them and I'd feel resentful and I would yell at them or I'd be very annoyed with them or it was making me feel like I was just rushing around all day long because that would take up so much of my time. And there's already so many things I'm doing. I'm like, you know, taking care of the property and then the kids and then making food and then homeschooling and then doing this. And then now I have to go and I have to pick up 1 million Tonys from the Tony box that are strewn throughout the couch and the floor because they just, you know, Sunny decided to throw them or whatever it is. So anyway, I have consciously made the choice that I am going to just not be bothered by that during the day. I'm going to be able to look at it for what it is, which is that, because Wes, my husband, will be like, Moses, what did you expect? It's like, that's the line I'm going to think about for the rest of our lives. Like one of the things that will define him because he's so right when he says it. My expectations are the source of almost all of my suffering because I don't know why I would have expected to have a clean house amongst four children and a dog. Like, I don't know why that would ever come into my mind. Mm-hmm. And so I am making my own life hell by expecting that. So I'm choosing not to expect it anymore. And it's really nice. And also I am choosing to go forward with the idea that we are going to have a fifth baby, but we are obviously have to wait right now. I cannot do it while I'm in this protocol. I don't want to do it while I'm in this protocol. I really feel totally fine and set and settled. There's no piece of me that's like, oh, maybe we should just do it now, even though that is what Wes wants. The thing that is funny and unfortunate about the timing, though, is that in 6 months will be the middle of like January, which is when two of my other children have been conceived. And I will not. And then if I wait until maybe March, if like we didn't get pregnant, you know, I don't know, who knows how the journey will go. But then two of my other children will be conceived there. So I'm like, Wes, even though I'd be cleared, unless we got pregnant in December, which would make a September baby, I will not try to get pregnant in January, February, or March because of just how this is like seemingly a small thing, but it's actually such a large thing to have all of our kids born within just weeks of each other in two different chunks like that, like two in October, two in December is really hard. Well, and I'm in October too. So anyway, that's a dumb little detail, but it is on the back of my mind. So I'm like, okay, it's either December or like April to start or, you know, to try. And I don't know if he's going to feel like that's too far. So even though I am like going forward with this, we are going forward with this idea, it's subject to change because maybe by that point I'll feel like we don't want to, we're good, we're complete. Like maybe a lot of these feelings will go away or maybe I won't be healthy enough to, I don't know. Yeah. Like if the protocol
doesn't. What if it's not clear by then? Does that change anything? Or are you just going to be like, whatever, I'm going to just do it anyways?
No, I think that I think if things like the EBV are still around, that's fine. But I don't feel if the Lyme is still around, I don't feel like that's right personally. Mm-hmm. Especially if any of my other kids test positive. So there is other factors. Like if none of them tested positive in October when we have our appointment, and if I have a tiny little bit of it left by the time we're given the clear window to try to conceive, then maybe I'll feel fine. But if some of them have it, I will want to be completely clear because that is not something to mess around with in my mind. Yeah. Even though Dr. Dandy is very confident, she actually said that she loves to treat kids that have Lyme because if you can capture it before they hit puberty, and even if you're after puberty with treatment, it's still important and still helpful. But she said that if you treat it out of their system before they hit puberty, it's almost like they never had it and they won't have any like longstanding repercussions or very few. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really good thing because all my kids are still away from that time period. I mean, Gage is getting closer, but like even if we started him on a protocol now, it would be okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling just like so lucky and grateful. And I know that sounds crazy, because it's like, oh, now you're going on this like whole thing. Like, I mean, it's a huge part of my life. I have had to be gluten-free now. Oh, and it's given me a like an avocado allergy. So when you start to shake up things in your system, weird things can happen. And so what's happening for me now is that I can't eat avocados. I vomit if I eat avocados. And that's new and weird and not devastating to me. I honestly don't eat very many avocados, but for some reason in these last like 2 months, there's been multiple occasions for me to eat avocado, I think because just summer. And it took three or four times of it for me to connect the dots that like, because I am not a vomiter. Like I do not. And I'm like, what is happening? And so now I've figured it out. It's avocado. I can't eat avocado. I'm like, okay. And she doesn't think it's going to be lifelong, but I'm just happy that it's not something like dairy, because that would ruin my life if I couldn't eat yogurt anymore. I know. So, but yeah, I'm grateful because I just feel like it was a bit of a ticking time bomb that we have discovered. This is the analogy that I used the other day describing it to Wes. I was like, I feel like we live on a boat, on a yacht. Our life is a yacht, and it's a really nice, expensive yacht, and we love it, and it's important. And somebody one day was like, why don't you just take it to the shop and get it, see what's going on with it? And you're like, ah, there's nothing really wrong with it, but okay, sure. And then you go and you take it to the shop and you find out that like there was something so wrong with it that if you didn't do that, you could have drowned in the ocean like the next day. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, oh my God. Okay. Now it's this expensive long journey to fix the yacht, but like you have to, you have to do it because it's the rest of your life and like you can't not do it. So yes, it's expensive. Yes, it's time consuming and it's changed things and it's annoying and like whatever, but I'm just so grateful that I didn't have to experience halfway drowning in the ocean before figuring it out, because that is how it happens for a lot of people.
And it is amazing you've had four kids with this and not have such crazy stuff. And I think about this a lot too. So in the world of root cause medicine, we talk a lot about how the environment is so much the influencer of things. So like with genes, we'll talk about how genes load the gun, but the environment pulls the trigger. And you, because people will say, well, my grandma had XYZ. Well, I have it with straight genetic things, potentially, yes, but with epigenetic things, which is how your body expresses, that is very much dependent on your environment. For example, we see a lot with hyperthyroid, so Graves' disease, in my experience, and we've learned this as well, but I've also seen it with patients, that I see that almost everyone who has Graves' disease has some sort of experience of almost like emotional trauma where they can't use their voice, where they maybe are abused, or there's something energetically with their voice, which I know sounds crazy to people, but there's such that thing. Or like with you, like there just might not have been enough. Maybe if you lived in a truly moldy home, like it would have turned into something bad, sort of like my sister's story where she had Lyme but also lived in a moldy home and almost died. You know, like you maybe just didn't have that like crazy trauma, that really crazy, you know, experience of having this XYZ thing, whereas the person who might have the same makeup as you, the same exposures, but then had that thing is just really, really sick. And so it's great to catch these underlying things and you don't necessarily have to wait for it to be this full-blown, oh my God, I'm dying kind of thing, you know, and mitigating that in our children as much as possible as well, you know, teaching them how to identify if they're having an issue early on so that it doesn't turn into this long, complicated, you know, health journey forever. But I'm just really proud of you for doing the work, because it's hard when you aren't super motivated by being really, really sick. Usually those are the people who go and do this work because they're like dying. But if you could do this work before you're at that stage, you might not ever have that experience, which would be so amazing.
I know. It's like I wish we had a crystal ball so we could see, you know, the butterfly effect of doing it or not doing it and see what would happen. But I'm just like, well, I don't – you know, why would you not – I don't think anybody would if they knew that they had these things going on, that they wouldn't decide to treat it. But it is a gut punch to get $1,600 worth of testing, you know, but it's seen as a very important non-negotiable. It would be like, you know, if you needed to do $1,600 worth on your car repairment or something.
Yeah. Well, and you know, for those listening, you haven't had this experience. Again, we're opposite, where you haven't actually had to do a lot of medical stuff.
I haven't
had to spend very little money on your health.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of women who are trying to conceive, I mean, $1,600 is a sneeze. I mean, you literally spend that with one doctor trying to find one thing, and you go to 20 of them. And then if you go down the route of IVF, that's like one appointment, you know? So, totally. You know, it can seem like a lot, but at the same time, when you're actually sick or when you're actually struggling with something, or like you've had 4 home births, you know, you haven't had to have a C-section or emergency NICU baby or any of these things where, you know, your perspective of the financial outpouring for health has just been different, you know, and that's also the difference between you and me.
I know.
It's just like, oh my gosh. I mean, we literally were just bleed money in the medical space, but then, yeah, it's just different. It's different experiences, but it's another thing to think about where it's like you almost have to spend money somewhere. I don't know. It's like some people just don't get away with it 100%. Maybe some people are really, really lucky and don't ever have to spend money on anything. And
they just get to save it. But I remember you telling me specifically one time that like just your routine ultrasound where you wouldn't even get results about what it was like $250. And it would be like 5 minutes. You just go in.
Oh, no, $600.
Mm-hmm. $600 for an ultrasound?
And IVF, yes. My ultrasound appointments are $600 to go in and get an ultrasound. And then they say, looks good. Because I remember having a thought, I'm like, that's my like initial appointment, which is a lot. Like I, you know, it's a lot to see a naturopathic doctor. I spend 2 hours with the person, outside of that, more hours reviewing everything, going through your entire health history, every single thing about you. And I'm like, I literally just walked in, I didn't even see the doctor. I mean, this is the difference. And you have to do that multiple times, you know, because it's $40,000 for one round of IVF, at least at my clinic that I went to.
Yeah, I'm glad that you put that in perspective because it's and that's the thing is like it's all about the perspective of things. You either spend the money now or you spend it later. And I saw a reel actually the other day that said that it was like my wife and I, some CEO dude, and he was like, my wife and I will spend over the next 20 years or something, we will spend, I think the number was like $600,000 because they're, you know, he's super, super, super loaded, but he was just saying in preventative health medicine like technologies, endeavors, supplements, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that we don't have to do it later. And obviously, again, back to the crystal ball, nobody has one to know that that's actually going to work. But it does make sense. Now, it's like you either invest now in, you mm-hmm. know, healthy food, which is more expensive, and alternative therapies for things if you need them, or additional therapies, or, you know, potentially you're dealing with surgeries and lots of medications and big complications later on from mm-hmm. ignoring the body all through all those years. So either way. Yeah. That's my life update. I would say that this has been one other real additional thing or quick thing is that I love summertime. Summer is so much fun. And last summer, you know, it's like when you have a little baby, it's fun, but you can't like do as much. And then when you're pregnant, kind of similar, although I did do, I feel like a lot of things when we were pregnant, but this summer has just been so much fun with the kids at the ages that they are right now, because yeah. my bigger three are like a little pod, like they're their own little group. And then I do get a lot of one-on-one time with Sunday still where like she and I are sort of a thing. And then like the other three are a thing, and watching them play and like seeing the way that the games that they play and how well they can be independent with each other now. And I can actually like finally really trust my son to be responsible in like whatever various ways. Also this summer, we've really finally figured out homeschooling, which has been a very difficult thing for me for always. And I love it, but it's also just not ever felt like we've been into a good flow. And finally, in these last couple of months, it's been so fun. It's working so well. We're like reading books. We're getting through lessons. There's no complaining. Like we're not in that energy, whatever it was, whatever it just shifted. Finally, it shifted. And it wasn't even me. I don't know what it was. It just has changed and it's been so enjoyable and so much fun. So we've been having a lot of fun, like with enjoying summer activities. And then I feel like this huge weight lifted off me about homeschool. I didn't realize how heavily I was carrying this burden of feeling like behind, and all my like, you know, sage wisdom, OG homeschool moms were like, don't worry about feeling behind. Da, da, da. But it's just very hard to not feel that way when you're like, yeah. But I'd be like, you guys don't understand. Like, I am not doing what I should be doing though. Like they're like, yeah, but they're learning. They live on a homestead and they do it. And I'm like, yeah. But the academic piece of me is still very, no. We need to be doing these things. And so now I'm feeling like, oh, I can like just breathe a sigh of relief in that knowing I want us to be. So that's the other thing that I would say is happening. And then I've adjusted as well as I can to my husband's new job where he's gone a lot. You know, I was joking with him the other day. He had to go out of town for one day. So annoying. And I was kind of pouting about it. It wasn't a big deal. He's like, Moses, I'm going to be back tomorrow. And I was like, yeah, but babe, you don't realize we've been together for 13 years and we have spent 90% of our time together for the last 13 years. Like, neither of us have ever had a 9-to-5 job. So lucky for that. It's just been that way because I was in school, and it's not like I was in school all day. Like, you know, our schedules were blocked out. Like, sometimes we'd have a chunk of 4 hours where we'd be in clinic and then we'd have nothing else for the rest of the day, et cetera. He always worked from home. He's never had a job where he wasn't working from home, at least in some capacity. And even now he still is like technically working from home, but he needs to be out in the field more than ever. Mm-hmm. And then he's traveling. So right now is the most that we've ever been apart in our whole relationship. And I was like, I am just used to being around you. Like, I want to be around you. I don't want you to be gone. And yes, obviously it's the way we parent and like all of that stuff, but it's just even him being like my best friend and gone all the time. So I just thought it was like a funny revelation. I don't think either of us had realized that, like how much time we spent together. And when we lived in the tiny house, people always thought we were going to like break up. They were like, there's no way you're going to live in that, you know, little box and still like each other. But anyway, so yeah, we're adjusting to things. We're getting it going. Sunny is, you know, weaned and doing great. She's eating so well. She actually eats like probably more than my at least 4-year-old eats right now. And that was a long standing journey of getting her to that point too with her laryngeal malacia, which often I still hear the sounds. So she will be one of those kids that probably carries it past 2 years old, because like 98% of kids will grow out of it by two. But yeah. Okay. So that's that. That's me. Everything is chilling. We're just like on a healing journey and not getting pregnant and maybe never will, but I'm choosing to not let it ruin my life anymore.
Good.
The decision. I'm choosing to say, yep, we're going to. And then if I change my mind, then fine. Because if I choose to say, no, we're not going to, I feel deep despair and heartbreak.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
not ready there.
Yeah, that's not a good choice for me to just like be mourning that yet. I can mourn it later if that's what we decide, but there's a piece of me that wants it more than I don't want it. And so that's kind of, yeah. And it's a meditation for sure. I have days where I still find my mind trailing down, you know, going on a rabbit hole and starting to get spin out and think about things. And I'm just like, no, we can't. I have to not do that. And we have to just stick to the plan and whatever. But so, okay, please tell me all about you and your business and your son's sleep and all of the different things that have changed, because you're in a much better spot, which happy for you.
I know. It's so funny when we do these life updates. I don't often go back and listen to them either. And I haven't listened to this one, but someone had reached out to me after the last one. I was like, are you okay? And then I realized reflectively, like, oh my God, I probably sounded so terrible because I was in a really bad place, you know, and it's mostly from sleep. My son was just not sleeping well at all. And I never went into my life being like, I'm going to be the voice of the women who struggle, you know, in certain ways. And in the crunchy world, especially when you have a different experience than what is quote unquote, like the right natural way to do things, which is obviously what most of us want. Like, most of us want to be able to just get pregnant naturally and just, you know, have an easy pregnancy and have an easy birth. You know, no one wants complications, I would say. No one's like, oh, I hope I have a really complicated, you know, life with lots of turmoil and all sorts of things. But that's just been my journey for whatever reason. I don't know why. Except for postpartum, you know, like that's the thing that has been easier for me. Breastfeeding has not been my struggle. And, you know, in the way that I breastfeed is probably how other women are when things go easy, that you don't even think about it until you've been in the struggle of painful intercourse, low libido, infertility, going through IVF, really sick pregnancies, having C-sections when you want, you know, home births. Like, until you've been in that experience, you don't realize what it's like to not have that. Because that's how I feel with breastfeeding. I don't even think about it. I breastfeed. It's so easy. I don't have cracked nipples. I don't have painful things. Like, he doesn't have a latch problem. You know, it's like he just gets all the milk he needs. He gains his weight. I have zero anxiety about his growth. It's not even on my mind, which I think is, again, how other women are if the part of their journey isn't hard. You know, they're painful. Like, I don't have painful periods anymore. So I think maybe I had endo before I got pregnant. And they say that pregnancy can heal endo, because I had such painful periods my whole life, like extremely painful, where I was like, you know, laying on the ground crying, you know, couldn't get up, couldn't function. My sister still has them. that way. And I'm going to send her to an endo specialist because I'm like, maybe we both had it. I don't know. Since I had Avia, I literally don't have painful periods. I wake up and I go to the toilet and I'm like, oh, there's blood. I guess see, it's that's my period how it's
been
now.
For me my whole life. I've been like, oh, there. Okay.
I'm just like, what? And I just keep waiting. I'm like, I mean, when is the pain going to come? You know, and it just doesn't. And then I go through my whole period and I'm like, literally not one cramp, not one. Wow. And it could be that I'm still breastfeeding and postpartum and there's some part of the hormonal, you know, situation that's been kept lower, you know, when I have prolactin that's high because I'm breastfeeding, that could be lowering my estrogen because I tend to have estrogen dominance outside of pregnancy. So who knows, because, you know, endo and painful periods can be an estrogen driven thing. But for right now.
Yeah. Well, and after you had weaned Avia though, before you got pregnant with Cade, you still didn't have.
Yeah,
I haven't. So I think it just literally like healed you.
Which is why I think it was maybe like an endo thing, because that can heal. I mean, my estrogen dominance, I'm sure, came back, you know, because I grew another polyp, you know, like I'm very estrogen-y. And so
I'm very not. I do want to get my hormones tested now that I've weaned, and I want to have you live interpret them on the podcast.
I would love that. That we should do a whole podcast of me going through your labs, because I cannot believe I test my hormones all the time. Like, it's so funny, but
never not one time. I don't have a single estrogen, progesterone, testosterone test in my entire history, Leah. Never, never not one time.
We're doing it now. I can't wait to do it for you. But anyways, it's like that other thing of, okay, I wake up and I'm not even thinking about this, you know, versus the person who's struggling with painful periods, it's all consuming. And so with sleep training, this is what I am getting to, is
now a word from our sponsor. Did you know that while 97% of women in the US take a prenatal supplement, over 95% are still deficient in key nutrients? That's why I love and recommend the Needed Prenatal Multi. Unlike most prenatals that offer the bare minimum, Needed goes above and beyond, using nutrient forms and dosages that truly support mama and baby to thrive. I've actually worked with the Needed team for years to help create this formula, and we spent over 3 years researching, collaborating with practitioners, and ensuring every nutrient choice was intentional. And now we have data to back it up. In an IRB-approved clinical study, women who took Needed's prenatal multi had significantly higher blood levels of essential nutrients like vitamin D, B6, riboflavin, B12, K2, and selenium, compared to women taking a standard prenatal. Even more powerful, only the Needed prenatal group reached sufficient levels of vitamin D, which supports a healthy immune system, bone strength, blood pressure regulation, and more. Women on the standard prenatal actually had vitamin D and B6 levels below sufficiency. This study reinforces what we've known for a long time, that real nourishment matters. Nutrient sufficiency supports fertility, a healthy pregnancy, and baby's development. Needed isn't just aiming for adequacy, they're proving what's possible. No matter where you are in your fertility or motherhood journey, the Needed Prenatal Multi is the one I recommend. Learn more about nutrient depletion and how to support your body and baby at thisisneeded.com/thrive and save 20% off your first order with code HEALTHYMOTHER. Again, visit thisisneeded.com/thrive and save 20% with code HEALTHYMOTHER. Okay, now back to the show.
You know, everyone's experience is so different. And what I have realized, being the person that I am, who is a person who is very conscious about choices and decisions, and an educated person who studies and researches and talks to people and talks to, you know, patients and all sorts of things. And I have a very specific way of how I wanted my life to turn out and how I wanted things to happen. And my experience has just been the opposite of that in every way. And so there has been this lesson that I have learned through my experience of less dogmatic thinking out of necessity, you know. Like the other day, I bring this up because the other day I was scrolling through Instagram and I'm just getting so tired of the just intense, non-compassionate, like polar opposite ideals about things. Mm-hmm. And I see this a lot in the natural community, and I understand why people say it, but it was like a professional, and she was saying like, you cannot sleep train a child before 1 year old. You will traumatize them, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And it's so funny because there was another podcast put out by like Dr. Amen, and he was talking about how it is important for your child to learn how to like self-soothe and all these things. And it's just so funny, like two professionals in the brain world talking complete opposites. And I'm just like, I am a doctor myself. I study and do things and I've lived experience. I can't even imagine what it's like for someone who doesn't even know how to interpret like brain scans and things like that and understanding what truly is. But what came to me is how important it is for us to just tune back into our own intuition. And I don't say that in the sense of it's not important for us to know things. I grapple with this a lot in the space of fertility in particular and pregnancy, of it's important to know what's ideal and to give grace and to have grace with yourself on what is ideal potentially isn't always what is possible. And the stress that you endure trying to live that ideal, I think, is so much worse.
Yes.
When that's not what's happening. For example, it's important to know about toxins. You know, like this comes up a lot with the toxin world. It's important to know that you don't want to just like live in a moldy home and that you don't want to just slather yourself with, you know, phthalates and plastics and all sorts of stuff, because it has a very real implication for your fertility, for your baby's health, for all of that. And at the same time, living in like extreme anxiety and fear where you like can't go out to eat because there's seed oils. I mean, the amount of people who've reached out to me, they're like, I don't think I can take this supplement because it has sunflower oil in it. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. First of all, have you ever eaten a salad with sunflower seeds on them? There's more oil in your sunflower seeds on your salad than there is in this little supplement. And that's very different than eating like pounds and pounds of canola oil because you eat at McDonald's every day. You know, like we need to pick our battles here. This is crazy. Like no, the strictness is crazy.
It's crazy. It's so what's sad is that it's hypocritical. It's like the definition of hypocrisy because of the amount of stress and toxicity that stress causes on our lives, like you're saying, right? But they don't even see it. They don't realize it. Because they're so like, it's that, what's that saying? You say it all the time. Like you can't see the forest amongst the trees.
Oh yeah. When you're in the forest, you can't see the other person's, you know.
When you're amongst the trees, you can't see that it's a forest. Like you can't see that it's like a whole thing. Like when you're so in something, you can't see, you can't step outside, do a 10,000 foot view approach and be like, what am I even doing here? Like I can think of so many different examples, as you just mentioned, of people that we know, friends, colleagues, like whatever, patients who are so, so worried. Like, you know, one time somebody wrote me and they were like, we were on the beach and there was a car that was idled in the parking lot and we could smell the exhaust for 20 minutes. What can I do to help detox my kids? And I was like, no, nothing. Don't. What are you talking about? Have you been ruminating over this? Are you worried about this? What is happening? Do not be worried about this. Like, live your life. You know, obviously when you have a choice and you're in the shampoo aisle and you can buy something that is of the more natural version, that's a great place to do it. It should take zero stress. Maybe it's a dollar more. And sometimes it's actually more than that. And that's annoying. And I understand that. But like, these are the little swaps that we can make that are important choices. But like, don't not eat blueberries because they're not organic. Just if there's no organic blueberries available, then eat the conventional blueberries. But don't like not eat them because, you know what I mean? Like, and then starve or not get the anthocyanins and all the different phytonutrients that are in the blueberries just because it might have some spray on it. Like, I think we need to all just kind of like take a deep breath.
Yeah. Well, and just the judgment. And like, I guess I'm here judging the people who are really strict. And then honestly, it's just a form of anxiety. And I have compassion for them because I've been there for sure. I mean, getting into that wellness space does push you into a form of anxiety, you know, like orthorexia is the proper term for it when someone has almost like an eating disorder because they are so stressed out about health. And I've been there and, you know, I am the person who's like, no, I actually don't eat that candy because it has red food dye and high fructose corn syrup and it makes me feel really bad. But at the same time, I'm not dying. And if my daughter is offered that at a birthday party, I'm not like tackling her to the ground and like out of her mouth, you know, it's not ideal, you know, and we do these other things to help, you know, protect her and all of this stuff. But anyways, it's like I'm trying not to be judging. And obviously I do sound kind of judgmental of that, but it's more to say like, I think maybe I would have been that way if I didn't have the experiences I had in my life of the compassion for those who we must know the things that are ideal. And then also we take it from a 10,000 foot lens. Just like you said, we back up and we say, okay, what is going on here? And the reason I bring this up is about sleep training. So I was trying to figure out what's going on with my son. he would not sleep. And he would not sleep in the bed with me. He would not sleep in the bassinet. He would not sleep in the crib. He was up every hour to hour and a half. And like fussing and rustling and moving and crawling and climbing up the headboard and flipping off the bed and like falling into the corner of the mattress or of the crib, like no matter where I put him down. And it could have just been a season of his life. It could have just been a 4-month sleep regression that lasted 2 months. It's very possible. But, you know, his brain, he's 7 months and already almost walking. So it's very possible he had like accelerated brain development. And so he was just not able to settle. But it got to the point where, you know, I was trying all the things and I was so sleep deprived that I was actually unsafe to drive my car. So there were multiple times when I was driving and I was literally slapping myself in the face and I had to call my husband and I was like, you have to talk to me because I'm about to fall asleep. Like if you are on a 24-hour road trip, which we have done, we have literally driven through a whole day. And that level of fatigue where you're like, this is unsafe if I don't pull over and nap, like I'm going to get in an accident because I cannot keep myself awake. And that was a problem, right? Like that's really scary and dangerous. And so in my mind, I'm like, okay, there are two choices here. I can start to do like a gentle sleep training. And yeah, maybe it's not ideal. He'll cry for like 20 minutes. But if I sleep more, then I maybe keep my whole family alive. You know, like,
yeah,
we have to make these decisions, just like in the free birth world where they're like, no one should ever have anybody help them, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, until like you are hemorrhaging or you have to have a C-section. And it's like, it sounds good to say that until you're in a lived reality of the life and you say, what is the lesser harm here? Sometimes doing something that's not quote unquote as crunchy and natural is the lesser harm.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I like mean with so many of the things that I'm talking about. Like sometimes less stress and anxiety is the lesser harm than like the seed oil in your supplement kind of thing. So with that, my husband actually helped a lot because it's so hard as a woman to hear your child cry. And granted, these are the things that got me through it. We did the normal sleep training that, I don't know, like taking care of babies teaches, and there's a method for it that she does, but it's like where you lay them down and then you go in like every 3 minutes and then every 5 minutes and you check on them, tell them they're okay, blah, 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 whatever. And the first night we did it, he cried for 20 minutes and I couldn't. He never cries. I never let him cry. You know, I would nurse him all night. We would sleep in the bed together. If he was in the crib, I'd get up and nurse him. And I know that's not quote unquote the best thing for sleep training, but it was, you know, everyone's like, it's biological. When they cry, you have to go to them. But I was like, okay, he's 6 months. And these were the things that I thought in my head. And a lot of people might listen to this and be like, oh my God, you're a horrible person and I'm never gonna listen to you again. And I'm like, okay, cool. This is what I did to get through it. If we had to drive somewhere and my baby hated the car seat, he would have to sit in the car seat and cry because that's the safest thing for him. I'm not going to get him out of the car seat and hold him in the car because that's not safe. So if he did not like the car seat, he would have to just sit in the car seat for 20 minutes and us drive to the doctor's appointment or whatever. He doesn't cry in the car, so he's never had that experience of crying. But if he did, if he was like your kids, I know they really hated the car.
Oh, my God. It.
It's like those were 20 minutes that like you have to – I'm sorry. This is the best thing for you, and I know you don't like this, and you're upset, and you're crying, but you have to be in your car seat.
Yep. It's so, hell on earth, but it's a must.
Yeah. In my mind, I was like, okay, you need to start learning how to sleep, and I have to sleep. And you're going to cry for 20 minutes and that's so hard and I have to go outside and like Mike is going to have to like monitor you. But like this is going to be better for both of us in the long run. And I just had to think of it as a 20-minute drive to the doctor's office, sitting in the car where he cries in the car. He doesn't like it. It's uncomfortable. He's safe. He's fine. But this is like the best thing for him right now. Again, a lot of people would be like, no, you must go to him. Okay. After the first night, the next night he cried for 5 minutes, put himself to sleep. He now puts himself to sleep. Immediately, no crying. It took 3 nights. The longest he cried was 20 minutes. I know that's not everybody's experience of sleep training. And if their baby's like screaming their head off, like, you know, so exhausted where they're falling asleep, like that's not what I'm doing. Like if he were to do that, I would go in and be like, something's not right. Like you can tell the difference between a baby who is screaming bloody murder because something is wrong versus mm-hmm. they're just not wanting to go to sleep or they don't know quite how to do it. And he is not crying himself to sleep exhausted, you know, where people talk about that with the cried out method. That was not the case. I mean, he's 20 minutes. I go in, he looks at me, you know, but it's like when you go in, they cry harder because they're like, I want you. But then eventually he just learns. It took
because
3 days.
To hold the boundary. This is like a little yes. microcosm to all of parenting macrocosm.
Yes. Okay. So this is the other thing that I said. I'm like, okay. And again, this is not a popular opinion, but when I think about my life and who I have become – I am really grateful for the hardships that I've had because I feel like they have shaped me into the person that I am. I do not feel like I am a great contributor to society, that I'm a great mother, that I'm a great wife, or any of the things because my life was so easy and it was paved for me where I had no struggle and I never cried and I never got upset and I never lost and I never had any problems. I am not the person I am today because my life had zero struggle. Right. And I'm not to say that like we go put our babies down and let them struggle. I'm not like even a huge advocate of sleep training because a lot of people say they sleep better when the baby sleeps with them in the bed. That's great. If that's how you sleep so that you can take care of your family and you don't die on the car drive, do that. If that works for you, that was not working for me. Like sleeping with my baby in the bed was not letting me sleep and it wasn't letting him sleep. So even though that's quote unquote like biologically natural, we were not safe in that environment because we weren't sleeping. And so wherever it is that you're going to sleep, I just knew for myself, I have to sleep alone. I can't have a baby like kicking me all night. I just don't sleep. And so when I saw this, it's like my daughter, if she falls down, you know, I don't like rush to her. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, obviously if she gets hurt, it's like, are you okay? It's like, okay, like she's learning to fall and stand back up. She's learning to do hard things. Like sometimes things happen and they're not the easiest, but that's what grows character. That's what helps her develop a sense of identity and a sense of self. And I'm not just coddling her her entire life. You know, I personally just don't think that's always the very best thing, but you do it within reason. You know, you don't throw your kid into a dangerous situation and be like, you're going to be fine. Like, I'm not that person. But there's this dance that you do as a mother, and only you know your child and only you know your situation. And so that's like what I've come at to, because like with everything else in the natural space, I've had a lot of guilt about doing things the quote unquote unnatural way. And I've just sat with myself and being like, why am I having this guilt? Because my baby is so happy. He now sleeps through the night. I dream feed him at 10 o'clock before I go to bed. He goes down at like 7:30 or 8. I dream him, feed him before he goes to bed. And I wake up and I feed him, not him waking up. I wake up just naturally around 3 or 4 and feed him one more time. He sleeps completely through the night. If he wakes up, he puts himself back to sleep. He doesn't even cry. He just fusses a little bit. So he's getting amazing sleep. He wakes up and just smiles at me. He's so happy. He's like the sweetest baby. He is growing beautifully. He's developing beautifully. He's the happiest baby in the world. And so when I saw this Instagram post, I'm circling it back, of this woman who's just like, you are going to traumatize your child if you sleep train before 1 year. And I'm just, I wanted to sit her down and be like, you don't know everything. Like mother's intuition is so much stronger. And if a mother's intuition is like, I need to sleep train or I need to co-sleep, even though everyone's telling me I need to sleep train, do that. Because you know your kid and you know what works for you. But to just blindly listen to like experts and all of the things and the shoulds and the should nots, it's just such a like gather all the information, take it all in, hold it all there, and then decide for yourself what makes the most sense. So that's kind of what I've been dealing with. And I'm so happy that I did, and I didn't guilt myself into just continuing to co-sleep because that's what I should do because I, you know, I can't stand to hear my baby cry. It's like if I was in the car, I would have had to hear my baby cry. The one night of 20-minute crying, if I just stepped outside, has now given us full night's sleep. It's like changed our whole life, you know? And so I just have this different perspective on things of helping to like guide our children. They call it sleep training because they're like, babies have to learn how to sleep. And again, I hear the people on the other side saying, no, they don't. Like they need you until they're like 3 or 4. They have to breastfeed forever. And I'm not like against that. But at the same time, I also feel like there's value in teaching a child how to figure things out on their own. Like we do not need to coddle them for through every single hardship. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, I completely agree with you. And I'm so passionate about this topic because I would love to have a conversation with somebody like whoever wrote that post that you're talking about and ask them some very pointed, important questions and also ask them about their individual experiences because probably they're one of the people who co-sleeping works beautifully with. Mm-hmm. And they're like, why would people not do this? And it's like, you just don't know because you haven't experienced it like your whole beginning part, how it may not work. And even when you do try to push through, you try to change your perspective, you try to lean into, it's like people have different sleep triggers. You're a very, very light sleeper. I am not as light of a sleeper, but I tried so hard to sleep train or co-sleep with Sunday and she didn't want it. She was the one that didn't want, she would bump into me and scream. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And she wanted to be on her stomach.
Yeah. Yes. He's like, get me out of here. Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Why are we doing this? Yeah, exactly. And what I want to say to the people who are still shaking their heads going, no, you ladies are wrong here. Like, I'm never listening again is listen to this. What is the net harm? What is the net harm or the net benefit?
Yes, net. That's what it is.
Net all is the net. Most important concept here to remember and to think about. Because if a mother is going to play herself, which is exactly what is happening all around the world all the time because of these very extreme opinions where a woman just plays herself and continues to suffer and be totally miserable because they think, well, it's funny because there's actually misery on both sides where there's women who are co-sleeping well, but they feel really guilty about it. And they're told that their babies need to sleep in their own crib and that they're failing if their baby doesn't sleep alone. And, but right. yet they actually love co-sleeping and they change it because they think they have to. And it's like, why? Don't change it because you have to. Like, what? Do whatever's working for you. But then there's women like you and who are like me who were not sleeping and feel guilty because they do want to sleep train their babies. And, you know, it's the opposite. But anyway, either way, what is better, you guys? A mother who gets into a fatal car accident and is dead because she is so sleep deprived, or a mother who takes her own life, or a mother who is even just depressed. Like anxiety and depression has long lasting postpartum depression and anxiety have negative effects on the child.
Yeah.
And if you've never heard of the still-faced experiment, I will link it in the show notes and you can watch it. It's really hard to stomach and watch, but it's an experiment that was done. I wrote it down already. Don't worry. Okay. That was done a while back. It's a psychological sort of experience where they have a mother interacting with her baby and she's like smiling and, you know, they're having this kind of like back and forth of responding to each other's cues. And then they have her turn. And then when she faces the child again, she has a still face. Like she's not, she has like a flat affect and she's not interacting with the child. And you see the baby completely start to panic and you see them dysregulate and like everything unravels and they start to freak out because they're like, I'm not getting you anymore. Where are you? You're gone. And when mothers are depressed and they're walking around as a shell of themselves all day, every day, because they're so completely sleep deprived because the guilt of social media and people telling them that they cannot do something that would take 3 nights for them to regain their happiness and back. What's the net, guys? Is the net better that baby was responded to all day and then completely ignored all day because responded to all night and then ignored with like a mother that could not love and could not be present because they were so depressed? It's interesting because I never ever see this talked about on any of the sleep training, anti-sleep training or pro co-sleeping accounts where it's like them giving the permission to the mothers where this does not work. It's like, that's not, they never want to bring up that to the audience. Yeah. They never want to say, and it's like, how many more people would you actually be serving? What is your actual intention? Because if your intention is to help mothers, which is our intention, then you need to be talking about all of this gray and all of this nuance because you are leaving people out. You are leaving them to feel like they are monsters for letting a baby cry one time for 20 minutes, an additional time for 5 minutes for a now however many more months of you being a happy mother who doesn't get into a car accident because you're so tired, who also can feel like motivated now, like now you're starting to work out. You went to Pilates this morning. Like you have you back because you have slept. And I do understand the cases where the sleep training doesn't work. Like you mentioned, like, you know, your baby, you have to follow your intuition. I could not sleep train Sloan. I wanted to so badly. It really sucked. I was depressed. It was not good. I would not, she would have been the case of having to do cry it out and I wouldn't do it. And that really sucked. And yes, that played me. It did play me, but I wasn't going to play her to that level. And everybody has their threshold. Right. And sometimes women need to play their child to that level. They need to cry it out because they literally are going to kill themselves. And I know that sounds so harsh, but it is true and it is real. And for us not talking about these things, it's not doing anyone any favors pretending like it's not happening because it's freaking happening. So I just like want everyone who's feeling very judgy about this to say, what is actually going to be better for my baby and my bond and my attachment? Because all day long, having a mother who's not present and resentful and angry and feeling snappy.
Like I snapped at Mike multiple times and it's
we're snapping, getting divorced.
Yeah. See me angry, which I'm never angry unless I haven't slept, is so much worse, you know, in my experience. But yeah, if my baby was like screaming bloody murder for like 4 hours, like that would be something different. Like something's not right, you know? Like it's just, this is the thing is if I had to summarize my whole life into one sentence, I think it would be, it depends. Everything is gray. Have compassion, and extremism is the root of all evil, like truly, because I just feel like I've had this experience. And again, you don't notice it until you're in it. It's the same thing with probably racism. Like, I do not have the experience of racism. When people of color talk about that, where it's like, you're so privileged, you don't even know. You're right. I don't know. I don't know what it's like, except when you go to certain areas where you are the minority. I actually do know what that's like. But outside of that, you don't know what it's like, the hatred and the judgment of the natural world when you do IVF, or when you have a C-section, or when you take an antihistamine during pregnancy because you're vomiting your brains out, or, you know, when you sleep train, and all these things that I've had to do that I didn't want to do. It's not like I wanted to do that. But you, once you do it, you're just like, oh my God, like, they're making me feel so like bad as a mom. And I just want to say, for anyone listening, if you've had that experience, and I know that a lot of people resonate with me because I am that person and that voice, and I don't share it enough on social media really at all, and I should. I need to be braver to just like speak up in that way. I can do it on long form like this. It's so much easier for me. But to just
because
say –
because there's
like,
a lot to explain, because it's so hard to get it all across.
This is why I don't like short form content.
Yes.
Because – there is so much to say, because it's in the gray. It's in the mm-hmm. in-between. It's in the let's talk about it. It's in the well, it depends. And that is, in my experience, what makes a good doctor, what makes a good mom. You know, like, for example, I'm not so dogmatic where I'm like, well, I sleep my baby in the crib every nap. It's like, no, sometimes I wear him. Sometimes he sleeps in the crib. Sometimes he sleeps on me. Sometimes he sleeps in the car. You know, like, he sleeps in different places. I'm not super dogmatic, even within my own boundaries, you know, of like my life, because it depends. And I tune into him and his needs, and I hold a boundary. It's not like every time he's upset, it's like, oh my God, I must like move my whole world around you. You know, it's like, there's a balance. Everything is a balance, and it changes every day. And, you know, I can confidently say that I do feel like I'm a good mom. And so for any of you out
you
there,
you are a good mom.
Thank you.
You're a very good mom.
Who are choosing a thing, whether it's, you know, IVF, obviously there's ideal ways to like optimize that. But if that's the path you want to choose, great. You know, pregnancy, if you're vomiting your brains out and you can't keep food down and you need to take an antihistamine, I did. My son's fine. He's great. You know, it's not like you want to just drug yourself up the whole pregnancy, but sometimes you have to, you know, and a C-section, obviously we don't want that if we don't have to. But if you do, don't feel like you were a failure as a woman because someone told you that that should never happen, or, you know, whatever. So that's kind of where I'm at in my like soapbox. And I know we've like gone really far to just like wrap up my other life updates. Other than that, I'm feeling so much better because I'm sleeping and I am able to start exercising more because I feel like my cup is full, so that I can give to myself more. I can, you know, I have more time at night to like read again a little bit, which is fun. And I have started to work again. I planned on launching my Womanhood Wellness membership at the beginning of the summer. So weird. Because
so weird.
Like, why did I think I could do that? But I'm giving myself grace. And my old self before kids, I would have set a deadline and I would have killed myself to get it done. And I would have said, you know what? I have to get this done. I have to work. I would, during our infertility journey, I poured myself into work because I didn't have another outlet. I had nothing. I wanted a baby so bad, and I had no baby. I had no baby and no pets at the time. So I just worked, and I became like a workaholic, and that was sort of my, you know, thing. And now that I have kids, I just see myself like, why am I working so hard? And I know that's a luxury. Not everyone has that choice. Not everyone gets to make that choice of how much they work or not. But I've very intentionally designed my life this way so that I could pick and choose how much I work. And, you know, I'm like, well, let's just push it out. Let's just keep pushing it out, because I don't want to take away this from the summer vacations and all of that. And we had to fly to Atlanta for my husband's grandfather's funeral, which was really sad. But the kids came and they were great on the plane. Neither of my kids cry on the plane. Cade just sleeps in the carrier. Avia just like watches her little iPad. That's another thing. Like, we do screen time. It's not excessive, but we do it, you know, shoot me. Like, I don't know. I'm just like, this is my daughter. She's fine. She's totally fine. She's creative. She's imaginative. Like, I just, yeah, I'm very much in that world of, you know, what's better, what's in the net gain. I think that's such a good point. So We went on another vacation to visit my parents, and they were awesome. She rode a horse for the first time because my mom has a horse ranch, and it was just really sweet. So I've just been in a soaking up motherhood season and feeling so much better now that I'm sleeping and getting ready to launch my membership, which I'm excited about. And I'm just going to go at a very chill pace. I just don't feel like I have this pressure to do anything, to make it anything, to, you know, I don't know. I'm just in a much more chill, fluid
place.
Yeah.
Good. I love that for you because, yeah, that was not how you used to be. And motherhood is humbling that way. And I mean, we were both, I think always more than me, were a little more organized or like a harder worker and things like that when we were in school. And it was, it's just interesting how motherhood changes you because like it happened to me and I was so resistant to it for so long. I had like my nails dug sliding down the dirt, you know, of my old life and the way that I used to work and the way that I used to be so fast and like, I used to get so much done and I was like such a powerhouse. And then you have a kid, you just can't do it. And I was like, oh, no, yes, I can. I will just work harder. I will just do it. And I will, again, like back to that concept of I'll just play myself in suffering and misery because I can't let this go. I can't accept the reality before me. And so accepting the reality before you is half of the equation. Like you said, it's we need to have the education of what's ideal, what's optimal. What is it that we know through science and technology and research of, okay, we should avoid these things. We should try to include more of these things, and then intersect it with your reality. And if it's not working, it's not working. And, you know, I'm obviously, both of us are very, very, very pro breastfeeding, but I am also not somebody who thinks that somebody who doesn't, like, I will absolutely with 100% confidence say breast milk is best for human babies and breastfeeding is maybe not the best for that mother and that baby then because of the way that the mother's mental health can be affected from that. And, you know, that's like blasphemy in the natural health world. You can't say those sentences. You can't say those things. It's so funny to me. I'm like, yeah, well, I just did. So come at me. What do you want to say? Like, what have you never talked? That's the thing. It's like, maybe these people don't work with clients and patients.
They don't work with people. To me, I can tell when someone, to me, the sign of wisdom, not knowledge. Anyone can, ChatGPT has knowledge. Anyone can have knowledge. Like what is in a book? Personally, I find wisdom and I can tell if a person has wisdom, which comes from experience of being around real life people, is that you're not dogmatic. You know, even with birth control, like I was on that podcast with Alex Clark, which, you know, she can be extreme on lots of things. I don't agree with everything she says. And I know she wanted me so badly on that podcast to just like say, you know, birth control is poison and all of these things. And it's like, I agree. There's a lot of issues with birth control. I'm the first to talk about it. And I am not going to sit up here and say that it can't ever be used and that it's not ever a thing. And you know why? Because I can think right now off the top of my head, like five of my patients that, you know, she was about to like, she was so anxious and so depressed from like extreme painful periods from endometriosis. Like she needed to be on birth control. Or, you know, sometimes there's situations where like you really can't get pregnant. Like this is a non-negotiable. Like you cannot get pregnant, like for whatever reason. Like there is a time and a place for so many things. And that comes from experience, in my opinion. And so people who are so dogmatic and so like, this is the only way, either they've been sheltered from any other person's experience, like they only work with like free birth people or whatever, and they don't know what like anything could go wrong or whatever, like breastfeeding, like they've never even seen it. Like I have a patient right now, she's done everything perfectly. Everything's amazing. And she is not making enough breast milk. She's just not. You know, we've ran her hormones, her prolactin is low. Why? I don't know. There's only so many things that we can do to help that. Mm-hmm. You know, she's doing the best she can. And I'm so proud of her because, you know, she found the best formula that she could to help supplement. And like, she's doing the best she can, but like to kill herself to try to do this. It's like, you've clearly never worked with someone where it's like, it's not her choice. That's not a choice. Yeah. Her body, for whatever reason, we have like tried to do all the things. Like, this is what's happening for her. This is her experience and her reality. And like, let's move forward and do the best we can with that experience. And that comes from, yeah, experience and wisdom. And so I bring that up because of the whole, like, it triggered me a little bit, this woman, you know, and obviously anyone listening who has a psychology background is like, Leah is like really triggered and she's having a lot of guilt. And she's like, you know, processing it through her podcast right now. But it's like, it didn't just trigger me because I feel like I've had enough experience in this world to know that it's fine. If someone comes at me and they tell me, you know, XYZ, you're not a real doctor, you're a bad mom, blah, blah. It's like, I don't believe anything you're saying because I know who I am. But the people who don't, and this is brand new for them of, you know, they've never had this experience and someone on the line is telling them that they're bad or that they're a bad mom or whatever.
It's bad. Like, it's
so bad.
It's so bad. It's so, and it's just, yeah, you're, I think the lack of working with actual real people is such a testament to that. Like influencers can say anything they want. Like these big accounts can say whatever they want. And I think the more extreme that they are, it actually shows their ignorance.
Yes, 100%.
It shows how they don't actually know anything.
Totally. And yeah, I agree. And I know that like we've gone over. And so I just want to say one last thing to wrap up my side is the other thing that I've been, the mantra that I've been talking about, like not only with sleep training of like justifying it and all of the things is with work. And, you know, I did pour myself into work a lot and it is a passion of mine. And I have thought like, should I just shut it down? Should I just not do any work? And, you know, obviously we would then not pay for childcare and all these things. So it's like, those are choices some families make where they just stop, the mom stops working and she just stays at home, which is totally amazing if that's what feels good for you. For me, I've reflected and it's like, this is my passion and I love it. I don't need to pour every single thing that I have into it right now. I want to pour more into my kids, but I don't want to give it up completely because it is a piece of me that I love. And then I don't want that to go away completely. And so I need to find a business model right now that allows me to nurture it, but it doesn't consume me like it has in the past. And so the thing that has been guiding me, if this is helpful for anybody, is the idea of thinking I'm 80 years old and I've looked back on this time in my life. And what am I going to be like? I want to live without regrets, right? I'm already thinking on my deathbed. Like, hopefully I live past 80, but you know, like just older, like thinking back, like, wow, I'm so glad I did X, Y, Z. And I want to live each day with that intention and thought in mind, because on the days where I'm like, no, I have to work a lot. And like right now I'm sitting with you, but to me, this is so fun. And I'm, yes, my kids are with the nanny and it's great. And looking back on this day when I'm 80 years old, I'm going to be like, you know what? I'm glad I made that choice. I'm glad I sat with Morgan and I have this podcast that my kids were playing with their nanny. You know, and like the next day, looking back, you know what? I'm really glad that I didn't work and I emailed everybody that I'm going to have to, you know, need another day. And I went and rode my bikes with my kids. I'm so glad I did that. And like every decision I make is now from that lens, not how much money can I make. I don't care about that at all anymore because we moved to Idaho. So that like helped a lot. And, you know, there's just different things that we consciously made so that we didn't have to make decisions out of lack or fear or scarcity anymore. And it's more like, what do I want to do and how do I want to think? And like looking back, it's like, if I completely shut down my business and didn't do any work, will I be glad that I did that? And the answer was no, because I really grappled with this. Like, should I just be a stay-at-home mom? Should I just like stop working completely? And like that answer was actually no. But the answer was, I'm choosing much more intentionally to be with my kids, way more than I ever have before, and working way less than I ever have before. And so that's the place I'm in, and really crafting my life from that lens.
I love it. You're choosing. This is all about choice.
I am choosing like every single day, the time with and without my kids is so intentional to be like, this is the life that I want, versus waking up one day and being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just like worked my life away when we could have made XYZ decision or change, or that I gave up my career and now I have, you know, my passion is not really here anymore. So that's where I'm at. That's my life update. I'll wrap it up.
And of course it takes sacrifices too. Like for anybody who's maybe listening to this and being like, oh, well, that's nice for you or something like that. You know, it's like, there are ways that this can be done. And I guess I just encourage in those situations of people feeling like, no, there's absolutely no way that I can make that work. I have to work full time away from the home. I mean, maybe it would take a really, really big shift, but maybe you'd have to move closer to family, to a totally different house, to make your cost of living different. Like both of us have made really, really big changes like that to the way that our like daily life is experienced because of how we moved and how we did different things so that this could be the life. So if this is what you want, I guess is my point. If you don't want that, then that's fine. But for those that are like, damn, I do want that. How do I do it? Or feeling like bitter or triggered by this, it's like, I just want to continue to be an inspiring voice and know that it's not because we, either of us have trust fund money or either of us have, you know what I mean? Like it's very much just, it takes years, but it is a choice. And it's like, okay, yeah, there's a lot of things that like we do not do. I have fully resolved and settled in the fact that like, because we already have four kids and if we have five, it'll be even more so, that we are not a family that's like going on airplanes for vacations for maybe once here and there, but it's not going to be a thing. If we are going anywhere, we are going to be driving. We are going to have to say no to a lot of things. We are not going to be taking our kids to Europe. We are not going to be doing these. And I don't even care. I do not even care. That's not what I personally want. Because when I think about my life when I'm 80, I want, I know that I probably won't have some of these things. But that doesn't, for me, like what's important to me and my husband, you know, in our life is not that. It is the idea of having like, you know, more children. And are they going to get their college paid for by us? No, sorry. It's not happening. Was my college paid for by my parents? Yes. And it was so wonderful. And I was so, so, so appreciative of that. I had scholarships. I have, you know, whatever, blah, 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 but still. And it's like, there are these sacrifices and these decisions that I'm making, but like for us, the benefit on the other side of a bigger family is like what's still driving and pulling that. But then there is these real actual full sacrifices. I don't get my nails done. We don't get our eyelashes done. Look at my nail. I have like one of my stickers. My sticker nails is off right now. It's just those hundreds and hundreds of dollars every month that I'm not spending intentionally so that I can do these other things. And everybody has their different things. So whatever. And we're not saying what's right and wrong is like what we do, but just, you know, in your life, whatever it is, however you want to craft it, you can. It just takes these small steps to be making these choices. Sometimes not small steps, sometimes very large steps, but it is worth it in the end because like it is your one precious life. So, and of course there's always hardship and struggle. And I really hope that everything doesn't just sound like it's peachy keen for us in this episode, because we do always share also the things that are hard. Like I will link in the show notes the update from last time. And you can see that realistically. The difference
between a slep and a non-slep Dr. Leah Gordon.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Well, thank you so much for that. Sorry that we went a little longer. I think you guys don't care. It's just the way that we are. And, you know, the nuance is a vitally important aspect to the way that we bring content out into the podcast. So sometimes we get a little wordy, and I think that it's all very important.
Yes. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.